97.9 FM, WCHL, and the UNC College of Journalism and Mass Communication presents Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus is dedicated to in-depth examinations of issues of overarching importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions to problems in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the UNC campus, here's your host, journalism professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome to Sports Focus. Today we're talking about fans' ravenous appetite for sports news and events coverage. We're talking to Susan Krause-Whitborn, who teaches psychology at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst, and to Tim Sutton, formerly of the Big Ten Network and now working with the Pac-12 Network. Tim, let's start with you. You have about a 30-year career in sports. What has changed in 30 years in terms of what's available for sports fans?
I think the tiers of distribution, the fact that these conferences of college universities now have their own distribution level. Big Ten Network is a single 24/7 channel that is it's a wonderful piece for the universities. The Pac-12 Network is actually seven different networks and six regionals and a national. I look at those as a big new distribution for college sports. And then you've got NBC Sports Network, CBS Sports Network, Fox Sports 1, 2, ESPN has 3, 4, 5 different networks. So the volume that's out there makes receiving it that much easier for the consumer.
And Susan, what explains that there is that much demand for sports information and event coverage?
I don't know. It's incredible how it has mushroomed. Just last night watching the World Series, you know, I thought, oh, I can look at the score on the side and I can watch something else while it's going on. And it all seems very, you know, tuned in to making information available. I think it drives itself. I think it's one drives another and it drives another. So the information is there because people want it. And then the more information that's there, the more people want. And it grows and grows and grows. I mean, sports fans have always had, you know, desperate need for information and for detailed information. And it seems like now all of these dreams are being fulfilled and then some.
Tim, I want to pick up on Susan's thought about desperate need. I'm going to use my brother as an example because he's not here to defend himself. He is a die-hard Florida Gators fan, and he is on Gator Zone all the time. And I'm thinking, what do you think is going to change from 20 minutes ago when you checked the website? How has that changed things, that any news or information or even video you can get off your mobile device now, anywhere you are?
It's changed in the fact that it is immediately available. I'm fearful that it's almost too readily available. And you've heard certainly coaches say to their players at certain times of the year, stay off of Twitter, stay off of these feeds because you're distracted and you're finding yourself in the possibility of inciting your rival, giving them bulletin board material. But the idea that there's new material out there because these young athletes are putting their thoughts to the internet, that there's new material all the time. I guess as your brother would be involved, why is he on it? Because something new is going to come up that he can then share with his friends.
Susan, is that part of the psychology? It's that shared communal sort of feeling of we can talk about sports?
Yes, I think it is. We know that being a sports fan, especially a loyal, dedicated, diehard sports fan, actually boosts your mental health. But it isn't so much the fan, just being a fan of any old team, particularly your local team, because that does give you that sense of connection to your community. So I think that's part of it. I mean, the need for information, I think maybe it has a different source. And, I mean, people just get kind of obsessively, tuned in on these things, every single detail. And that goes, I think, beyond just being a fan. I don't know if it's people are constantly creating little theories and they're looking to test those theories with the information that they get, either about the player or about the team, or what's working, what's not working. So they're using that information to say, oh, see, I thought this manager was making this mistake all along, or this player, is flawed for this reason or is great for this reason. So they get these theories and sub-theories, and that goes off, I think, in a different kind of mental wonderful direction. I think just being a fan and having fun and enjoying it and feeling connected is something different.
And Tim, sometimes it does come down to you think you're actually making a difference. You know, we see the commercial that's running right now. The guy holds the bobblehead doll, or he rubs the bald head of his friend, or they do some kind of, you know, clap and snap and some kind of thing that they think's going to affect the outcome of the game. Does that drive then the need to watch more and more and be more and more involved, do you think?
I think it's the connection. Exactly, your home team, right? If it only—it's only weird if it doesn't work, right? Our good luck charms are exactly that. But it's as much the connection with the product as it is. I think sometimes it's breaking news. We want to be the first to tell you that there's an injured player, or that there's going to be somebody suspended, that there's going to be a different pitching sequence, and so. That goes back to, I think, some reporting and the idea that I'm giving you new information. And if you have that new information again, then I'm an owner and I'm a contributor. I'm involved and passionately connected to my product.
Susan, we do like to be in the know as humans, do we not?
I most of the time, although sometimes we'd rather not be in the know.
Such
denial is a great coping mechanism.
Let's talk about a concept that you have studied, and it has to do with berging and corfing, basking in reflected glory, cutting off reflected failure.
Right.
Will you explain those concepts quickly?
Yes. Somebody, particularly who's a Fickell fan, will, when the team loses, cut off reflected failure. So they'll say, they lost, okay, even if so it's your team. But then basking in reflected glory is, we won. So you kind of ride it, as the team rises and falls, so does your connection to them. And that's where I was talking a little bit about denial, though. I mean, sometimes corfing is good if you're trying to, you know, protect your emotions that day and just say, oh, I hate them, they're horrible, they're the worst team ever, and I'm never going to root for them again. And that's just a way of kind of getting through the day after a devastating loss.
Here at UNC Chapel Hill, we've heard plenty of people saying, thank goodness that football's almost over, and thank goodness that basketball is almost here. So we'll pick up on that thought when we return on Sports Focus in just a moment.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now, back to the show on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
And welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking today about fans' ravenous appetite for sports news and the need to watch events of all sorts on television and mobile devices. We're talking with Susan Krause-Whitborn and with Tim Sutton. Tim, we were talking before the break about this cutting off reflected failure and basking in reflected glory. What that doesn't seem to explain would be being a Cubs fan. That's almost like basking in reflected failure. Explain, you know, what you've seen in 30 years across the spectrum for just rabid fans.
Well, there's always next year. That's the motto that we Cub fans live by. And why? Because we're connected. I think back to my youth, and that's really kind of, I think, what sports reminds us of, is the play games of youth. We're going to win some, we're going to lose some, eventually we're going to win a championship. Well, it's been 107 years for the Cubs, and we have no championship yet. But the idea that we keep going back to it because it's familiar, it's fresh, and it orients me to my team, and it orients us to the team. And I liked earlier in the last segment, you know, the us and them. They lost it, we win. It's a very strong emotion, and I think the emotional tie with sports is what makes it popular across so many formats.
Susan, explain the we lost sentiment that seems to run with Cubs fans, because that's almost like a badge of honor.
Yes, it becomes that. I mean, there's an underdog syndrome that can actually be beneficial to someone's mental health. I mean, there's kind of this sense that, you know, I really can hang in there no matter what, no matter how bad it gets. And even that can bolster your sense of identity, that you're sticking with this people who are the, you know, the fighters and the tough guys and the ones who are against the world. So that actually twisted in a twisted way really can make somebody feel good about themselves. And then they scoff at people who are fans of teams that always win because, oh, it's easy to be a fan, you know, of them because they're, you know, so great. But look at me. I'm the true fan. I'm, you know, so this then reinforces your identity.
Tim, let's jump back and talk about college sports for a moment. With pro sports, let's say that halfway through the baseball season, you've already lost 50 games and, you know, the season's over. What do you have left to root for? But in college sports, you have a team to root for just about all year round because you have so many different teams. And now so much of that is available that you can even watch on your app or watch ESPN. I was watching field hockey the other day. In the old days, there's no way we would have seen highlights or a game coverage of field hockey. So it's not just the amount of sports, but it's the range of sports that we get to participate in as fans these days.
Well, and I think that's fantastic for all athletes. For, you know, from my perspective and the college sports scene, and I'm going to say just that focused, that there's all this new distribution of content. I think you're going to see fencing. You're going to see, you know, certainly you see soccer, which has been quite popular. The hockey now in the Big Ten region comes in. So the kids that watch it can identify the idea that one day I might be on TV. It's not hero worship. It's almost building heroes within yourself. And I think that's pretty empowering that female sports, certainly in the Big Ten Conference, there's an initiative. It's 50-50. The amount of female sports and male sports that are on TV is an equitable share. And I think that is critically important for the idea that you're building communities and these young athletes can see, even on a short term, that they have a place to shine, and the distribution, their parents can see it, their family, other folks, that's a real powerful way to build the sport from the grassroots.
And Susan, we all tend to really identify with the undergraduate institution. I've been at Carolina for a long time, but I still have some real ties to my undergrad institution. And then if you have that many different teams that you can root for, surely one of them is going to do fairly well in a given season. So how does that fit into the mindset of fandom?
Well, it's a little bit hard to say. I mean, it's identifying with your college team, though. I mean, that is easier, I think, to talk about just specifically why your college team matters to you. It's because you're forming your identity during your college years, and so if sports was a part of that, then that becomes your connection. I mean, certainly universities use that as well. They call it the front porch to the university, and they really, you know, use it to get alumni involved. But psychologically, there's a lot of validity to that because it becomes this identification with the whole school. I mean, sports is a part of it. There's other aspects as well, hoping that, you know, you identify with your major and your college. But I think the nice thing about being able to watch some of these other sports, as Tim was saying, is that it takes the focus off the really big ones, off the football, off the basketball, and it starts to shine some light on these, you know, people who work their, you know, hearts out, field hockey and volleyball, these unsung heroes. It's nice to see them getting some attention, and it's definitely good for the alum. You know, as an alum, then you go back and you think, you know, this team that I watched playing on the field, I can now watch on TV.
And Tim, Big Ten Network, Pac-12, they wouldn't be doing this if there weren't something in it for them. So it's not like an altruistic thing that we're going to cover more sports. There must be appetite for it.
Well, there's two factors when I think about college athletics, and it's exposure and it's revenue. And some of these new revenue streams that come, whether it's from streaming or content sponsorship, that's important and valuable for these institutions. And likewise, the exposure of some of these minor sports will continue to drive that. So the two factors, the exposure and revenue, are really valuable. And anytime you get a new distribution platform, the possibility for both is certainly increased.
And let's pick up on that, because not only are the big conferences having their own networks, but for goodness sake, Texas has its own network, the Longhorn Network for one university. Do you see more of that happening?
I actually don't see that happening. The way these conferences have aggregated, the SEC network is soon to launch. I would say that we're probably less than 5 years away from seeing some kind of formation of an ACC network. So the idea that standalone schools, maybe Notre Dame will try, but actually Notre Dame has come in and joined the ACC except for their football. That Longhorn network is going to be the exception, and I think the powerful conferences will aggregate their resources and be able to create their own networks that way.
You're listening to Sports Focus on WCHL. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now, back to the show on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back to Sports Focus, where we're talking about fandom. Not only the ravenous appetite that fans have for sports, but the psychology that drives that appetite. Susan Krause-Whitborn is one of our guests. Susan, we were talking earlier about the opportunities for non-revenue sports athletes to be seen and perhaps valued by their classmates, by others on campus. How important is that for those athletes?
Oh, it's tremendously important. I mean, totally separate from the research that I do, I teach a large introductory psych class, and I have 56 athletes in my class at the moment, out of a class of 400 students. And, you know, all the different teams from cross country all the way up to football. And I've interacted a lot over the years with students from these other teams. And you know, I see they get up all crazy hours in the morning. I see them out in the field practicing, and they go there and they don't feel they're getting a lot of support from their fellow students or recognition because they're not getting the coverage. So I don't think they do it for that reason. I think they play these sports because they want to, but it doesn't hurt to have all that hard work sort of validated by their own classmates. So I do think it's great. I mean, maybe sometimes they don't want the attention. Maybe they'd rather stay a little bit under the radar, but I don't think so. I think that to see all the attention go to one or two teams when you're working just as hard or harder can be rough on somebody who's 19 or 20.
And Tim, all the networks that you mentioned, Pac-12, Big Ten, ACC, SEC, that is an opportunity for the non-revenue athletes to get some exposure. But it's also, it has to be a money-making venture, or at least not a money-losing venture, or the conferences would have no interest in it. You're not in it to lose money, even though you do want to support these other athletes. So how do those two sort of work together?
Part of it is distribution, and so you've got your subscription revenue. But I almost wanted to go back to what Susan was talking about, and I could hear pride in her voice. excuse me, with the ability to identify with some of these other student athletes and support them and see them on campus and feel a kindred spirit to them. And I think that, honestly, is more valuable to the schools than the actual revenue, that there becomes a whole unity to the dedication of what these athletes are. And Susan, that was really fun to hear you say how many of these athletes you respect and probably share in their successes and share in their pains as well.
Absolutely. Yep.
Susan, what have you noticed with those non-revenue athletes? Are they starting to feel the love, or has that drifted down to the conference that your school is part of?
Well, unfortunately, we haven't reached that level. You know, we're in the MAC for football, and we've struggled a bit with the football team. So there hasn't been that attention yet on our other student athletes. Although every school tries especially when they've made it to the, winning the conference. I mean, our softball team has won the Atlantic 10 Conference for years and years and years. But I think that, but looking into the future, anything we can do to give more credit to them is beneficial. And if it's having more TV coverage or even radio coverage or even print coverage, I think this is really helpful. It validates what they're doing. And also you have to keep in mind that all these players were star athletes as kids. I mean, they have convoys of people who come to their games. So the more attention we can give to them on a broader scale, I think the better it is for us, and it shows us the diversity of the college athlete. It isn't just this huge football player or, tall basketball player. It's somebody who's just a tough, well-built, women's lacrosse player who can go out and really, hit, or a softball player.
So we will have to leave it right there.
Oh, sorry.
That does it for this edition of Sports Focus. My thanks to our guests, Tim Sutton and Susan Krause-Whitborn. Thanks also to producer Justin Blankenship and to engineer Gary Kirk. Thanks to you for listening. Cheers.
Thanks to Richard Southall, Mark Nagel, and Deborah Southall of the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina for their research and guidance, and for access to CSRI's international network of sources. Sports Focus is a production of UNC's College of Journalism and Mass Communication.